Bibles to Exodus chapter 3. Over the last few weeks, we have been recounting our family story. It's a story that helps make sense of our own. This is the Exodus story. This is a story that long before it was even written down would have been recounted around campfires and in tents under a low lamplight. You might have heard, like, "Mom, Dad, Auntie, would you tell us again the story of how God rescued our people from Egypt?" If you remember from a few weeks ago, we realized that this story also is not only the story of our faith family, it's the story that we as Christians live out every day. So where have we come from so far? We are presented with this people, the people of Israel, the Hebrew people of ancient times that have been living under the oppressive regime of Egypt for a good 400 years. And in the midst of this, God's people have been blessed and they're multiplying, and this is causing fear for Pharaoh, who, as a response, decides to try and exterminate the people. First, by recruiting midwives who decide they're not going to listen to Pharaoh. And then by upping the ante and saying, we're going to throw any boy that's born into the Nile. This is intense. And on the heels of that, we see one mother put her son into the Nile, but protected in this protective little ark or a basket. It's the baby Moses. Puts him into the reeds, and then we see him drawn out of the reeds by none other than the daughter of Pharaoh, which is the title for the king of Egypt. He is then raised in the palace, a Hebrew boy in an Egyptian home, under the king who is the oppressor of his people. And he grows up in this space until one day he looks out and sees one of the Egyptians oppressing one of his people, one of the Hebrew people, and he goes out and ends up murdering this guy. This gets around among both the Hebrew people and the Egyptian people, and nobody is a fan of this. And so Moses has to flee for his life into the desert, where he ends up meeting his wife. There's a real cute meat story going on there. And meets his wife, gets married, and we fast forward like 40 years just like that, until Moses one day is now a shepherd and encounters this flame that is on the bush, and the bush isn't burning. And the flame is the messenger of God, God himself, who speaks to Moses. And that's what we stopped at last week, seeing God revealing himself to Moses. This is a story of God coming to the rescue, to rescue his people from slavery. But this people doesn't yet know who this God is. Some of them, it seems, have kept up some sort of understanding of this God. But at the same time, they're not quite sure. So one of the goals of the book of Exodus is for us and the people of Israel to learn who this God is, which is helpful to get ourselves into the story. So imagine you are in this story, because you're supposed to. Imagine that you are a part of this people. You've been serving the king under forced labor. You've been there 400 years. And all of a sudden, you hear that the God of your long-forgotten ancestors is coming to bring you out of Egypt into the wilderness to serve that God. You might be a little suspicious. I was serving this king, and now I'm supposed to serve this other king. Or imagine that you're Moses. You actually tried to bring justice to your people, but your identity is all over the place. You have an Egyptian name that has a Hebrew meaning. You grew up ethnically as a Hebrew, but culturally in an Egyptian palace. You fled your country to save your life, because you're also a murderer. You've lived as a shepherd for 40 years, and then you meet this God who says, hey, it's time to go back there. Confront the king whose government who wanted to kill you, and demand freedom for the people who, last you checked, didn't want your help in the first place. You might be a little bit suspicious. Or imagine that you're a 21st century person living in Coquitlam, BC, and you've shown up at a Sunday service here at Hillside, or at a youth alpha at your high school, or at a small group your neighbor was hosting, And they're telling you about a God who's asking you to live a life that's pretty countercultural, that might ask you to love your enemy or refuse to gossip, a God who might require you to put boundaries around your sexual relationships or take boundaries off your generosity, a God who might invite you to a more difficult way of life. You might be a little suspicious. My life, like the Hebrews' life of Moses, might not be everything you hoped it would be, but how do we know the alternative is better? What if I'm being taken in? To follow God out of slavery in Egypt, you'll want to know a little bit about who this God is. You'll want to know that serving Yahweh is actually better than serving Pharaoh. And over the next few weeks, Yahweh is going to do exactly that. God is reintroducing himself to God's people, and by reading well, I think we get to be introduced to this God as well. We're covering a large swath of text today. How many of you have been reading along in Exodus as we've been going? Have any of you been? I'd encourage you to, because we're like engaging in a long story that we won't, over the entire time, as much as we'd like, we will not be reading from the pulpit the entire thing. Even though we'll be discussing the entire thing. And so if you're following along, you'll have a much better ground in the story. And if you like story, this is a good story. So I'd encourage you to be reading along. But this morning, we're going to be reading, starting where we left off last week, following right from Moses' first introduction to God, who self-introduces to Moses by name. By the name, I am who I am, or it could also be, I will be who I will be. So, God says, call me Yahweh. In the Hebrew language, it's recorded in the phrase, I am what I am, is Echye Esher Echye, which you might notice, maybe, sounds a lot like the name Yahweh, which is most likely like a conjugation of the same verb. So basically, Yahweh means the one who is being, or the one who will be, the one who brings into being. Yahweh is the one who has to do with the very concept of existence. So God says, in essence, the summary, I call myself, I am who I am, so you call me the one who is. And in our Bibles, the translators have typically recorded this with Lord, the all four caps. And you'll notice as we read scripture today, I've swapped out Yahweh for the Lord because that's kind of how it was originally written in. Moses comes to God, as we talked about last week, asking, who am I? And God answers with his own name. I will be with you. You don't need to worry, Moses, because my very name is on the line. Now, this morning, there are two major sections that we're going to be looking at. First, right after telling Moses God's name, Yahweh goes into giving him instructions about what's about to happen. So the first half, what's going to happen? The second half looks at what actually happens when Moses goes back to Egypt. And between these two sections are probably the most bizarre verses in the entire book, maybe the Bible. And yet through all of these, one theme continues. Yahweh is introducing himself. And Moses and Israel and us are navigating whether or not Yahweh can indeed be trusted to be who Yahweh said he is. So let's dive in. After this whole encounter, Yahweh God tells Moses that when he gets to Egypt, he's to gather all of the elders of Israel and explain that God appeared to him, to tell them that God has heard their cries and that God is going to bring them into a land that's so bountiful, it's like expensive products like milk and honey are just flowing in the rivers. That's how bountiful the land is. So in verse 18, chapter 3, verse 18, God continues. The elders of Israel will listen to you. Then you and the elders are to go to the king of Egypt and say to him, Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. Let us take a 3-day journey into the wilderness to offer sacrifices to Yahweh our God. But I know, Yahweh is saying this, that the king of Egypt will not send you unless a mighty hand compels him. So I will send out my hand and strike the Egyptians with all the wonders that I will perform among them. And after that, he will send you. We have the excellent beginnings of a quest story here. God has given Moses clear instructions. God even includes how Pharaoh is going to resist those instructions, but in the end, they will be set free. Now, you'll notice I've adjusted the NIV translation just slightly here, and that's because I think it's worthwhile to notice that in Hebrew, the same root word is being used throughout this whole account. It's the word to send out or stretch out. It's kind of the theme word for our passage. In Hebrew, just in case you need a good throat clear, it's shalach. And Pharaoh is not going to shalach, send out God's people, even if a strong hand comes. So God is going to do his own sending, his own shalaching. Yahweh will send out his hand to perform wonders, and then Pharaoh will send them out. So you've got all of a sudden this battle between Pharaoh and Yahweh fighting about who's going to send. At least that's how Yahweh tells Moses that things are going to go. Moses is not so sure. For one, Moses answered, "What if they do not believe me or listen to me?" Hold up. Didn't Yahweh just say they would listen to him? If you just look right up there, 3:18, the elders of Israel will listen to you. Okay. But what if they don't listen to me? What if they don't listen to me or believe what I say, and they say, "Yahweh did not appear to you"? Moses expects the elders to have as little faith as he does. And God is kind. And God desires to have his people trust him. And to do so, he meets Moses with exactly what Moses brings to the table. Exactly what he has on hand. Moses doesn't have to go on some sort of shopping spree or big quest to find a secret grail or something like that. God asks, "What's that in your hand?" Perfect. We can use that staff, his shepherd's staff. And then Yahweh does for Moses what he's later going to do for his people. He displays his power through signs and wonders. And this plays into a really important theme. Moses, as the leader of God's people, or so far maybe the future leader of God's people, actually is like a mini version of Israel. Everything that God is going to do for Israel first happens to Moses. And we've seen a lot of this already. Moses is saved from the evil plots of Pharaoh by going into the Nile River in a basket among the reeds. Israel is going to be saved from the evil plots of Pharaoh by going through another body of water, which is also called the Sea of Reeds. After causing the death of an Egyptian, Moses fears for his life and runs into the wilderness. And then Israel, after the sea destroys the Egyptians, spoilers, they flee into the wilderness. Moses, while wandering in the wilderness, ends up at Mount Horeb, where he meets Yahweh appearing as a fire in the bush. And there he receives instructions, Torah, from God. Israel, while wandering in the wilderness, is going to end up at Mount Horeb, also known as Mount Sinai, where they will meet Yahweh appearing as a fire on the mountain, and there they will receive their instructions, their Torah from God. So it shouldn't surprise us that before God shows his signs and wonders before his people, which are sometimes called the plagues, Moses will encounter them first. And through them, in this little microcosm, God is training Moses to trust him. And I think Moses actually does a good job here. 4:2, Yahweh said to him, "What's that in your hand?" "A staff," he said. And Yahweh said, here's our word again, "Send it to the ground." And Moses sent it to the ground, and it became a snake. And he ran from it. And then Yahweh said to him, "Now send out your hand. Take it by the tail." So Moses sent out his hand, and it says, and he strengthened it around it, and it turned back to a staff in his hand. "This," said Yahweh, "is so that they may believe that Yahweh, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has appeared to you." That line is so important. "This is so that they may believe Yahweh." And it sets the context for everything that's about to come. Everything that's about to come in these next like 5 or 6 chapters is for the people to know that God has come to the rescue. The God who is, this Yahweh, is the God who has come to them. Verse 6. Then Yahweh said, put your hand inside your cloak. So Moses put his hand inside his cloak. And when he took it out, the skin was diseased. It had become as white as snow. Now, just imagine how freaky this would be just for a moment, you know? So just before we just gloss over this, he's just done this whole, like, snake thing, and then he's like, oh, my hand's all of a sudden diseased. Puts it back in his cloak, and it was restored, like the rest of his flesh. Then Yahweh said, and now, if they don't believe you or pay attention to the first sign, then they'll believe the second. And if they don't believe these two signs or listen to you, then take some water out of the Nile, the source of life for the Egyptians, and pour it on the dry ground. And the water you take from the river will become blood on the ground. Life to death. As you've kind of seen with the same thing that happened to his hand. I don't know if you've noticed, but through this whole encounter, it seems as if Moses is growing in trust for God. Like, at first, he immediately says, they're not going to believe you. Like, he just contradicts what God says. But then, as God gives him instructions, he follows word for word, the text says, what God says. He says, send out your hand, sends out his hand. Put your hand in your cloak, puts his hand in his cloak. And I think the narrator is intentionally showing us exactly what Yahweh said Moses does. Which is significant, because I don't know if I'd reach out and grab a snake, especially some weird staff snake. Like, if I just thrown a thing and it became a snake, I am not touching that thing. And then something changes. The signs and wonders that Yahweh shows him, it proves that God is right. Of course, Moses probably thinks, that people will believe in this God. But will they believe Moses? I think Moses might immediately be reminded of his own personal anxieties around his ability to speak. Now, we can't get inside Moses' brain, and I don't think we should try to. But there's a few things that might be going on. Was he scared of going to Egypt, and so he was searching for an excuse? I would be. Was he just uncomfortable leaving the home and family that he'd spent the last 40 years building? Was he nervous about maybe a legitimate speaking pathology? Whatever it is, his personal fears are now driving things. Moses quite literally says this. It's an awkward translation, but he says, excuse me, my lord, I'm not a words man. I wasn't yesterday, or the day before yesterday, or even when you first spoke to your servant, for I am heavy-mouthed and heavy-tongued. I wonder how often we fail to listen to God's call because of our own insecurities. Even though this seems to be a personal fear for Moses, though, Moses paying attention to his own insecurities and inability to follow is still a lack of trust in God. Because God has called Moses to do something, and Moses just saw God do miraculous things, but he still doesn't believe that God could have chosen him to do this. I wonder how often I'm in that category. We're like, well, no, I can believe God can do wonders, but not through me. Because here's the list of ways that he could not. I'm inadequate as a vessel. I was telling our prayer team before this morning, I was like, I'm feeling heavy-tongued today. But friends, here's something fascinating. God is really different than our modern way of dealing with self-esteem and our insecurities. If I were with Moses, here's my temptation. My temptation would be to say, Moses, you're way better than you think, man. Don't worry. I'd actually argue with Moses about his insecurities and about his weaknesses. Yahweh does something very different. We read, and Yahweh said to him, who puts mouths in humans? Or who makes them deaf or mute or seeing or blind? Aren't I Yahweh? Now go. And it says, I will be with your mouth, and I will teach you what you will say. Is his name again. Who am I? Moses. The answer to who you are? I will be with you. Aren't I bad at speaking? Moses. The answer to your inability? I will be with you. The answer to our issues of identity and our insecurities and our fears, friends, I believe are really wrapped up in that reality, in the very name of God, the God who will be with us. Now, I'll tell you, that requires more trust than him to just get rid of our inabilities and weaknesses. Because you have to be in relationship with God and tethered to him at every moment. If you're relying on God to be strong in your weakness, you can't say, like, thanks, God, and go do your own thing. I think Moses responds like I would, still scared. Still isn't quite sure that God knows what he's doing. So he kind of like glosses over this. And he says, well, send who you're going to send then. Which isn't really like a send me, God, I'm here. To which God and Moses then have an extended conversation, which we're just for the sake of time going to briefly summarize, where God says, okay, Moses, you have a brother. I know him. I know him. I'm with him. And actually, he's on his way over here to meet you right now. He is going to be your mouth. He'll speak for you, and we'll have this kind of chain of reactions. He'll be like your mouth, except separate from you, and you will give him the words that I give you, so he'll be like your mouth, and you'll be like God to him, is what the text says. Not saying Moses is God, but this is the chain of command. So Yahweh to Moses to Aaron, and this will be a solution that God provides for Moses' insecurities around his ability to speak there. After all this, God says, okay, so go. Moses does the appropriate thing and talks to his family about this. He goes to Jethro, his father-in-law, and says, hey, I'm going to take my wife and your grandkids, and we're going back to Egypt, you know, where they wanted to kill me, and we're going to head over there and release my nation from slavery. And Jethro just says, go with peace. Jethro's got some faith, I think. And then they go. And then we get to this crazy, weird turning point. So we've got a summary here at chapter 4, verse 19, where we kind of get a recount. As before we change places, we're remembering what happened. Yahweh had said to Moses in Midian, go back to Egypt, because all those who wanted to kill you are dead. And if you know the Christmas story, you'll be like, whoa, this happened to Jesus. That's a story for another time. So Moses took his wife and sons and put them on a donkey and started back to Egypt. And he took the staff of God in his hand. And Yahweh said to Moses, okay, the final travel checklist. When you return to Egypt, see that you perform before Pharaoh all the wonders that I have given you the power to do. But I will harden his heart so he will not let the people go. Then say to Pharaoh, this is what Yahweh says. Israel is my firstborn son, and I told you, let my son go so he may worship me. But you refuse to let him go, so I will kill your firstborn son. At a lodging place along the way, Yahweh met Moses and was about to kill him. But Zipporah took out this is Moses' wife, took out a flint, cut off her son's foreskin, and touched Moses' feet with it. Surely you are a bridegroom, a relative of blood to me, she said. So Yahweh let him alone. And at the time, she said, bridegroom of blood, referring to the circumcision, just in case you're wondering. Remember when I said this was the crazy transition point in the middle of the text? And yet, are scrolls cheap? Is ink easy to come by? Is the Lord flippant about his words? I don't think so. We want to wrestle with the text. A couple things. I think first, it's helpful to see a theme that is going to be replicated over and over as we go through Exodus and Scripture, where the Lord says, where Yahweh says, I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart. This is a challenging thing for us, particularly because we have an English idiom called being like hard-hearted, which In English, we often use the word hard-hearted to refer to someone who's like emotionally unresponsive, who are like stubborn, kind of cold, maybe cruel. And that's not quite what the text is actually getting at. It's actually like God is going to can make firm his heart. The word in Hebrew means like pretty much to strengthen his heart. In other places, like when Moses grabbed the snake, and I said he strengthened his hand around the snake, that's the same word that's being used when God says, and I will harden Pharaoh's heart. Carmen Imes, scholar in this, has helped me understand this a little bit more. She would say that this is in some ways almost like God giving Pharaoh the courage to do what Pharaoh was planning to do. Pharaoh, you are like pretty committed to these people. Power to you. If you want to go in a battle against Yahweh, I'm here. Pharaoh's resolve is increased. Now let's continue in this. So his heart's hardened, and Yahweh says, hey, I've been asking you, Pharaoh, to let my son go. Israel is my firstborn son. You let my son go, or I'm not letting your son go. This is kind of the tension here. This is a place it's really important for us to get our brains into the story of what's going on. It's important for us, first of all, to remember what Pharaoh did do already to the firstborn sons of Israel, to the sons of Israel. The boys that were born, he killed them. Sometimes when we think about conversations around vengeance, I've heard one scholar say that we are often made really uncomfortable because of our position of privilege. Having suffered less than many around the world, our impulse for, is nobody going to stand up for me, is a little bit less than maybe it should be. I think if you're a reader of Scripture and you're part of this story, you're going, oh, wait, God is taking this seriously? He is accounting for the death of my child? God cares? This is interesting. It's important for us to consider. And lest we read too quickly, I think this crazy story that comes next is really informative to the whole thing. There's a couple things to note in the second part of the story. This whole God trying to kill Moses, and then an emergency circumcision happens, and then it stops. A wild story. A couple things to note is that Moses apparently had not circumcised his son, which in that day, for the people of Israel, that was their cultural covenant marker to say, we are part of God's people. And for some reason, Moses had not brought in his children into the covenant of his people. That's interesting. Next, as an Israelite reading this story much later, you might also be flagging the fact that Moses was fleeing from murder. He was fleeing from the vengeance that would happen. He was seeking refuge in Midian. And as Moses is on his way back to Egypt, as an Israelite reader, you might be going, wait, is God going to hold him to account for the murder that he took? And these questions are being played out in your mind. It's no small thing that this seemingly random story is inserted right after we're told about this retributive justice for the sons. We're kind of primed to say, okay, Moses, Yahweh's got this ultimatum with the people of Egypt, your son for my son. We're trying to be ancient readers of this story and realistic ones. As I said, you might want someone on your team to pay back the other side. The other side might well deserve it. But here again, I think we see a foreshadowing. Moses is mini Israel. Something happens to Moses before the whole people go through it. Moses goes first. So God is going to give Pharaoh a threat, an ultimatum. But when God actually goes to kill someone, how does that happen? What happens there? So God says, I'm going to take your firstborn, And then immediately we see Moses, who may have been one of Pharaoh's firstborn, goes to kill him, and we're like, okay, this is the story playing out right here in front of us, and what are we going to do about Moses? It's a whole thing, but this is happening. What happens when God goes to kill him? Well, the covenant is brought up. And Zipporah goes and brings her family, by the way, another woman rescuing Moses. She comes in, brings Moses and his family back into covenant with God. And it says the opposite happens with God's resolve against Moses. Instead of being strengthened, it's loosened, it's weakened. The covenant of God has a double effect. It seems to strengthen Pharaoh's resolve. It makes them less welcome with Pharaoh and more welcome with Yahweh. Something happens where, for Moses, this blood sacrifice that marks covenant brings him into a place where, though he ought to have been slain, he is redeemed. Something that the people of Israel, we will see next week as we talk about the plagues or the signs and wonders, when God also says, the life of the firstborn belongs to me, but whereas Pharaoh throws them in the river, I'm here about redeeming them. Foreshadow again, and I hope you recognize the way that Jesus' death swallows all of this up and answers it even more fully. That God is in the business of redeeming even those who are outside covenant and might be willing, ready to die, which, by the way, will include many Egyptians before they leave the promised land. God's covenant is open to all who will trust in him and join in. I think this is good news. As the covenant with Yahweh increases, Pharaoh's heart strengthens, and Yahweh loosens. Aaron shows up, and this is another me just gliding over huge parts of the story. But Aaron shows up, they meet together, and then they go to actually do what God says that they're supposed to do and enact what God says is supposed to happen. And so they go to the elders of Israel. They do the signs for them. It's actually unclear in the text whether it's because of the signs that they actually, like if Moses actually needed the signs. But the elders of Israel see the signs, and they see that God listened to them, and it says they fell down and worshiped the Lord. And now it's time to go to Pharaoh. Now, there's a couple things that are just interesting to pay attention to. If you want to go home and do some highlighting, and you pay attention to what happens here in chapter 5, and compare that, in chapter 5 starting at verse 1, and compare that to 3:18, where God tells Moses what to do, they kind of take things a little bit into their own hands. I think they're like pretty proud of what they've done. They leave the elders behind. They just go just Aaron and Moses, which is weird because God says, take the whole crew with you. Moses, or Pharaoh knows all these elders. He doesn't know you. They go alone. They change the language. They call themselves the God of the Hebrews instead of the God of Israel. They call themselves the God of Israel rather than the God of the Hebrews. They leave out the fact that God met them in the wilderness. They're a little bit more aggressive with their instructions to Pharaoh. Instead of having, like, please, they're like, let us free. And they also don't say, we want to go for 3 days to give sacrifices. They say, let us go. Send us out. That's it. That's all. Pharaoh doesn't respond well to this. They cower a little bit. And then you'll notice they go back to what God actually said to say. And then word for word, they say, oh, yeah, actually God met with us, God of the Hebrews. And then they also pivot too much the other way and say, and if you don't, God might hurt us, which is also something that God didn't say. It's good to know that Moses and Aaron are humans as they navigate this, and they're realizing, okay, no, I didn't trust God enough. Okay, well, now I didn't trust God enough and trying to find this place. Pharaoh does not take well to this. And he asks the question that we started the morning asking. Who's Yahweh? Which for Pharaoh may be a question that he will regret asking. Mostly because he's pretty intent on not loving Yahweh. Because over the next chapters, and this is what we'll get into next week, Yahweh will introduce himself, as he has to Pharaoh, to the whole nation of Israel, to Pharaoh. And this battle of sending versus sending, strong hand versus strong hand, will really play out. And we will see which God is worth trusting. Before we get there, Pharaoh still is in his position of pride. He's like, no way. I don't know this Yahweh. You think he's so strong? I'll show you how strong I am. And he borrows Moses and Aaron's phrase. They say, thus says Yahweh. Pharaoh tells all his servants, say to the people, thus says Pharaoh, no more straw for your bricks. And you have to keep the same level of work going. You're going to work harder, because the reason you want to go sacrifice is clearly because you're weak. We need to up your workload. You're lazy. You don't know what it takes. You want to know who is God? Pharaoh. To the point where Moses concludes the section at the end of 5:23, saying, God, why have you sent us? Why have you sent us here? The Hebrew people ask Moses this question. He says, you have made the smell of us to be a stink in Pharaoh's nose. And then you've given him a sword to kill us. What good have you done? For us, this is an important question. What is God going to do? Is God really going to be with us when it feels like the plan isn't working? I don't want to leave you in like a ton of suspense. Next week, we're going to get to see how God shows up and introduces himself. I'd love to invite our team up as we move to respond. One thing that I love and secretly really do not love about Scripture is how real it is. It'd be convenient and a really nice thing to be able to tie this up in a little nice bow, and then you could put it on your quote calendar and like, this was the nice, like, happy lesson for today. And go home, go about your business, like, oh, all I need to do is X, Y, Z. God honors our story enough to actually join into the midst of it. To join into our experience of going, Lord, all I've got is a staff. I'm stumbling all the way along. Are you here? Will you show me who you are? You've said you will be with me. Can you show me? And sometimes, for us, our process needs to be continuing to look back at the way that God has shown his faithfulness, the ways that God has shown up in the desert and rescued us from the death that was imminent to us, if not from God, from Pharaoh's Egypt, who would have taken vengeance on Moses. So I just invite you to take a moment. And just in your heart of hearts say, Lord, Yahweh, the one who is and was and is to come, the one who brought me into being, you see me. Lord, you know all of the ways that I need, like, mortal redemption. And I need your blood on the cross to rescue me. Lord, I see all the ways that I am imperfect and weak. Lord, you see all the ways that I try to do what's right and I make a mess of things. And I wonder, in light of that, in light of the person that we come as today, what we know about Pharaoh, what we know about Yahweh, which king do we want? And ask, even if in this morning you're realizing that you have had to be choosing between a Pharaoh and a Yahweh, that you would see the profound love that this Yahweh has for you. That he will be with you. And I invite you, maybe for the first time, to make a decision that even with the blurriness that I still have about who Yahweh might be, he seems like a far greater God than this Pharaoh. And maybe you just say, Lord, I don't know you that well yet, but I'd rather you than Pharaoh. Let's continue to pray as we sing. Have our prayer team here who would love to pray with you as well.